Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X at JWright929ESPN. Or beg your pardon, at JWright929. Drop the ESPN. That's the old one. That one might be able to advise you on crypto scams. Although it doesn't even seem like that's been happening for a while either. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio dial, you can keep streaming us on the Odyssey app. We're also available on iHeartRadio as well as TuneIn Radio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How are you, my friend?
I am well. We are waiting a little bit of a different schedule. So Kevin this week had a conflict. So Kevin is trading with Cobb, and I'm assuming a date to be named later. So Kevin will be with us on Thursday. Cobb will be with us here momentarily. So we'll have David Cobb here today. That also means no trivia today. I presume Kevin would like to do trivia on Thursday.
There's no telling with him.
I have not specifically broached said issue with Kevin, but I'm willing to bet that Kevin is probably itching to play some trivia on Thursday. So David Cobb is going to join us here momentarily as we deal with a little bit of technological issues. Let's talk about what we got coming up on the program. CJ Hurt is going to join the program during the next segment. We'll get his thoughts on everything that has happened throughout the NBA. We'll get into the list to start hour number two. The Mavericks have made an impressive hire in terms of their basketball operation, so we'll discuss that. A little bit of a development with Brendan Sorsby and perhaps his ability to play next year. We will then welcome Chris Harrington during the bottom part of the second hour. He's got two big pieces of content up over at the Daily Memphian, one of which was kind of an all-encompassing peek or look at everything that had happened from Adam Silver's comments about Nashville to lottery changes, and now we're getting into draft preview. We discussed it a little bit on Friday, but we'll get Chris's thoughts as he previews the guards for the upcoming NBA draft. So we'll talk about that with him. Also get into a little of the transfer portal, particularly with basketball, as we've seen some big key additions, both for the Tigers and for other teams of local interest. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But we are now through some of our technological issues. We welcome to the program normally our company on a Thursday, but he's our company today on Monday. He, of course, is David Cobb, writes about college football, college basketball over at CBS Sports. You can follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day. Good Monday to you.
Hey, good Monday to you, sir. Weird coming at you.
By the way, I think you're on your computer.
Oh, dang. Okay, give me one sec.
All right. I mean, it'd just be a shame to waste that high-powered Shure microphone that you have. I mean, that's creme de la creme.
You know, hey, this.
There we go.
There we go. That's crisp.
Well, the other thing is, if you don't say anything early, then it's like, all right, well, we're just gonna deal with it. You know what I mean? Like when you don't tell the person, hey, you're on the wrong mic setting. Like you're basically just gonna do 3 hours on the wrong mic setting. That seems to be my experience.
It's a Monday.
It is the most Monday of Mondays. All right, so I was thinking about this before we get into some overreactions. So it's the last Monday we will not know where the Grizzlies are drafting. Is there an actual way to prepare for the draft lottery? Like, is the only thing to do just get your reps in on Tankathon? Like, what are we supposed to be doing? Like, should we be avoiding games of chance? Like, should we not be flipping coins? Should we save up all the luck, or do we need the reps?
Oh, no. I think you got to go find yourself some four-leaf clovers. You got to sprinkle some sage. This is huge.
If you're into that sort of thing.
I know you probably got into this last week, and I was hoping we would get into a little bit on Thursday, and we didn't. But aren't you glad this is the year that we had to do the whole tanking thing because they're flattening the odds? Next year's draft is going to stink. I'm not saying the Grizzlies, I mean, they might end up being bad. They probably will end up being bad again next year, and you're probably going to tank. But, like, this was the year to push in the chips, and by golly, they pushed them in. And they could stand to reap the benefits of the fact that the odds have not been flattened yet, and the fact that, like, this is a baller draft. So, I mean, I feel pretty good.
I reserve the right to answer that question till next or till Sunday at, I don't know, 2:45, 2:30.
I know, but in the future, like, won't you feel worse about trying to tank when the odds are going to be far less favorable for those who do?
But I guess you have to look at it two ways. Number one, they haven't gotten anything approved yet.
That's true, but I feel like once silver comes to the table with something like this, it's as good as gold, is it not? I mean, it's like the NCAA proposing tournament expansion. Yes, it has to technically be ratified by all the bureaucratic committees, but like once we know about it, like I feel like it was the Board of Governors that would have to approve it. I feel like, you know, once they would look really dumb to say, nah, we like it the way it was.
I think you are right in terms of a policy like this, where I am a little, I'd like to see how the vote goes, is the expansion stuff, because you kind of get conflicting reports, because I certainly agree from the NBA office's messaging, it is very strong, very resolute, almost as if it's a formality.
Yes.
But you hear enough reporters that are like, I don't know, like, because they think, what, they have to get 23 votes, I believe?
It would be so weak, though, to vote against this. I mean, how is it bad for the NBA to incentivize winning?
I think that's the larger point, is expansion, I think, is a different issue, because that kind of becomes more of a bottom line number. Like, how does that affect the money that we're, like, specifically putting in our pockets, whereas it's very clear, I think, that you should do something about the incentives to win or not to win. And so I do agree with you. This feels more like it doesn't necessarily impact what goes into their pocket.
Yeah, I mean, this is just like a basic health of the league matter. I feel like this had to be, I know the ratings will say otherwise because we calculate ratings all weird now, but like, you can't convince me that this was anything worse than a bottom quadrant caliber NBA regular season. And I know there's more issues than like teams tanking, but with everybody. Okay. So basically now, I mean, say what you will, the technical playoffs still are 16 teams, but in reality, there's 20 teams that make postseason now. That's an issue, because it's like, all right, if you're not going to be in that, and even if you are, like, going to be in the play-in, there's just so little incentive. Like, oh man, like, got to win this Western Conference play-in so we can go get our brains beat in by the Thunder or the Spurs.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't see the incentive. So you got to, okay, maybe you can't incentivize people to try and be awesome, but you can try to incentivize them not to stink down the stretch. And there was way too much teams trying to stink down the stretch this year. And this change, it's in keeping too with like the whole trying to get guys to play 65 plus games for award's sake, and incentivizing the pursuit of all NBA, because that impacts your eligibility for a supermax, right? If all of a sudden you vote against flattening the odds, like you're going down dual paths that make no sense. Like this is in keeping with the direction the NBA is trying to go, to be more relevant, be more competitive, be more compelling during the regular season. And if the owners don't approve it, to me, that is a sign of massive dysfunction within the NBA.
I think all that's fair. I guess where I've been trying to be, I don't know, maybe fair is the right word, or more inquisitive, is how did we get here? Because I think that is an interesting question. Here's what I would say. Is it a fundamental flaw, characteristic, maybe is the right word, that they have a league that doesn't care about winning? Or was it a very unique set of circumstances that all kind of coalesced and, you know, we had a perfect storm, if you will. So you have, because I think there's a couple of things at play. Number one, I do think if you're, let's say like you're a team that's somewhere in that like 6 to 12 range. You know what I mean? Like you're not title, like top title contender, but hey, you can talk yourself into enough breaks go our way, maybe. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like that kind of team. I do think you took a look and you realized like, man, look at the Thunder. Look at the Spurs. And look what it takes, man. Like, look how much depth they've got, and we ain't anywhere close to that. So we got to start selling off, and we got to start figuring out ways to like, answer this issue. And so I think you brought a couple of teams in from there. Then I do think a huge problem was teams that got off to a bad start took a look at the draft and was like, hey, man, we don't even have to get, like, top five. Like, we can get a really good player. Basically, if we're in the lottery, there's a good chance we're getting a good player, and that changes us. So I think that brought in a whole host of other teams. And then it's almost like, well, hell, everybody else is doing it. We got to jump in, too. And so then that brings in some other people. And so the reason why I say, like, how did we get here? I think we can all probably say at this point they have to do something. And I'm not quite convinced that this solves anything, but hey, maybe it's one of those situations where it's like, even if you don't solve the issue, start trying to figure out how to solve it and keep tweaking and keep tweaking.
Yeah, but this is enough of a deterrent, I think, because you get a team like the Grizzlies. All right, you went into this past season with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. on the roster. You added Ty Jerome to bolster your competitiveness, help with the departure of Desmond Bane. You're hoping to get substantive contributions from Cedric Coward, from Zach Edey. Like, the Grizzlies still intended to be competitive this past season, and then it flipped. Like, it's crazy how quickly they went from aspiring to still be, let's say, a top six seed in the West. Like, the Grizzlies realistically aspired to avoid the play-in at the beginning of this season, and I don't think I'm being out of pocket with that. I mean,
no, I mean, you always have to use the caveat of with good health, and then people can go, well, then why should they have ever expected good health? Like, okay, but in a universe where they got relatively decent health from their team, I think they were going to be very much in the exact same range that we saw the Timberwolves, that we saw the Suns, like that kind of mushy spot that was like, what, 4 through, I think it was like basically the Lakers, the Rockets, the Nuggets, and the T-Wolves all finished within what, like 2 games of each other?
Right. But my point is, if let's say this new flattened system with the relegation zone and what have you, and all that were in place this past season, do the Grizzlies throw in the towel like as quickly and as decisively? And let's say this, let's say the 2026 draft is not a good one. It is, but let's say it's more like the 2027 draft. Like, under those circumstances, I don't think it's as obvious that, oh yeah, we would trade Jaren, you know? Oh yeah, we're done with Ja, right? Like, I think there's a world in which you say, okay, we're gonna keep this together. This wasn't our year, but we're not, at minimum, we're not gonna trade Jaren. I mean, that is the foundational cornerstone of your franchise for all intents and purposes, because you knew going into this year that things were kind of on the rocks with Ja. But like, Jaren, I mean, come on. Like, if you're in a situation where there's not really any incentive to tank or to be bad, like, this is a cornerstone caliber piece. And if there's not some gold mine awaiting you at the end of a bad season, like, your desire, the selling it to your fan base. Like, I think the Grizzlies, without ever speaking it out loud, really have done a great job of selling it to the fan base. We've probably helped, because it's so easy to look at this draft, to look at the situation they were in to look at the way that NBA lottery odds currently operate and say, well, they'd be stupid not to tank. But I don't think it's as easy of a sell if they're in the same situation in December of this coming season with flattened odds potentially and with a lesser draft. I don't think that's as easy of a sell. I mean, of course, you know, you just did it once, so like it would naturally be harder. But I'm saying, like, if you had John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. on this next roster and ended up in the same situation but with flattened odds and a bad draft, I think the Grizzlies are still trying to win games deeper into the season.
Okay.
And that's good for the NBA. That's good for the NBA.
I'm with you on that. What if you had flattened odds and another good draft? Like, that's kind of I do think that this is a kind of the, as like I said, like the perfect storm of good draft, teams that felt kind of out of reach and everybody's trying to rebuild on the fly. And so like that kind of motivated everybody probably to make decisions that were, I don't know, maybe it felt more rash or extreme, but I tend to think you're right, but I also, if it's enough of a good draft, I do think there's still going to be enough people that are like, we're not competitive right now, screw it. Like, let's just figure out how to get into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at, it feels like. But, I mean, I will say this, like, for all the bluster about, like, the NBA regular season, I mean, this, what we're seeing now with a lot of these series going six games, going seven games, like these playoffs are, you know, at the end, it does still kind of feel inevitable, right? It feels like it's the Thunder's to lose, and it would be a surprise if anybody else is hoisting the trophy at the end. But the playoffs have delivered. They've been, I would say, really good. In that, I mean, if that's all the NBA cares about,
I thought this weekend delivered. I didn't feel great about what we'd been watching. I thought this weekend was great.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so yesterday, neither of these games, like, came down to the final possession, per se. But at the end of the day, like, you did have two game sevens on a Sunday on the sports calendar when there was really nothing to compete with it. And, I mean, that's the NBA sweet spot, is getting those series to go six, seven games. Did we have a sweep? I mean, was there a sweep?
The Thunder swept the Suns. Was that it?
Yeah.
Because Spurs was gentlemen's. I don't think we had a sweep in the East, right? Because Magic went seven.
No sweep in the East.
Knicks went six.
Yep.
And Cavs and Raptors obviously went seven. And then the Boston. So what did we have? Do we have three game sevens in the? Yeah, we had three game sevens in the East and a game six in the East.
And if that's all you care about, I mean, if that's your business model, is to produce compelling playoffs, then like, Job well done. Job accomplished. I mean, we're not done yet. Like, we still have a lot of playoff basketball ahead of us. But, I mean, the first round, I would give, like, a, you know, an A minus, maybe.
Yeah, especially when you consider, like, you know, the first round is oftentimes where you're going to wind up with bad matchups. You know, it's right. Supposed to be designed to have bad matchups. I do think maybe that's kind of the other thing, that the other overreaction, like, you can think about from the NBA. Maybe, hopefully we'll be wrong, but it does feel like we have pretty good parity in the NBA other than, like, the two best teams right now.
Like, yeah, well, and then you're,
like, the Western,
you know, you're bad teams.
Like, the Western Conference does feel like the Western Conference semifinal, or the Western Conference finals between the Thunder and the Spurs could be, like, an all-time series, but it does feel like the rest of it is, like, all right, we're kind of playing for second, or, you know, but, I mean, I guess it's fair to say we kind of felt like that last year, and then the Pacers, they weren't outclassed by the Thunder. Like, they got beaten in the seventh game, and when their best player got hurt in the first half.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually really excited for Pistons-Cavs in the East, because, I mean, I've always followed JB since he left Memphis. Like, he was the coach that I covered. I knew him better than I knew Taylor and really liked him. And so I've followed his career since he was, I don't even know how you say it, fired, I guess. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it, but the way he got fired, like, made him more sympathetic to me. So I've always like rooted for him and wanted to see him do well. So now you get him coming after coming back from being down 3-1, the Pistons against the Cavaliers, another team that said thanks but no thanks to who I believe is a really good coach in JB Bickerstaff. And so now you get the two of them against each other. You get JB versus Spida. I think that's a really good series. Now, at the end of the day, do I see anyone from the East like really challenging or beating the Thunder? I mean, probably not. But again, to your point, like that's sort of how we felt going into the finals last year, and Indiana made it a really an awesome series. So, I mean, I'll hold out hope that like maybe we could get that, you know, a replication of that again. But I mean, I'll say this too, like the Luka thing, it seems very mysterious, right? But like if somehow like LA were able to get reasonably healthy Luka in that series against the Thunder, well, now all of a sudden, do I really believe it's going to be uber competitive? Not really. But like the intrigue of a Lakers team that now has Austin Reeves back, that could theoretically maybe get Luka back, paired with LeBron, like, in terms of like ratings, storylines, you know, something that's going to hold the sports world's attention, like that series has all the ingredients. It's just, by golly, I mean, I think Oklahoma City might just be too good. They might just kind of race past all of our hopes for maybe what that series could be.
Well, I mean, Luka with the Mavs, you know, I get it. It's the early part. It's before it felt like the Thunder were fully formed, but he bounced them in six.
Yeah.
And that team the next year wins the title. And maybe we could figure out like, hey, it could be like the ultimate of its star. Maybe what it takes to beat them is like unlimited star power.
Yeah. I just ultimately think it's going to be the what if, because I think it's going to be a situation where if he plays, he's not 100%, yeah, or he misses a couple of games of the series, and then you're like, then he's trying to ramp up on the fly down 2-0. You know, that's just the unfortunate reality. It's like we didn't see him at all in the first round, and because of that, it feels unlikely that he's going to be even close to 100% whenever he does get back out on the court. But, you know, yeah, I think overall it's like, yeah, the crowning achievement of this NBA playoffs, if we get a Thunder Spurs series that sort of sets the stage for like what the West, what that hierarchy is now, like that could be really, really good. Like that could, like Wimby versus Chet, the reigning champs versus like the new kids on the block.
Well, and like, the Spurs punked them during the season. Like, hey, does that translate? Or is it just, hey, man, in the postseason, it's a different animal. You're not seasoned enough. You haven't been in the oven long enough. Like, hey, that's at least interesting.
No, I think so. I think that's what it is too. I don't know what the odds are. I mean, I got to think the books surely given Minnesota very little chance in that series, surely given the Lakers very little chance.
I think they're both like minus 900.
But these two Eastern Conference series, I mean, the Pistons Cavaliers, like I think has better, like if you're like way into basketball, like a better series. But just from like a market standpoint, like New York versus Philadelphia, I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, it's in the East, it's like teams that are within like driving distance.
Right.
I mean, with the Cavs, they talked about it last night, but like it's the Dan Gilbert series. Like Dan Gilbert has invested heavily in his hometown, the city of Detroit, and yet he's the owner of the Cavs. And like, you know, then you have Philly in New York. You've got Embiid after they vanquish Boston being like, please don't sell your tickets. I don't know. That was kind of the other thing I was thinking about over the weekend. Can a first round series change your narrative? Because maybe it's the opponent. Maybe it's the stakes. They were down 3-1, and Embiid comes back, and from the moment he started playing, that you felt like it was a different series. But for something that we typically move on very quickly from, which is a first-round series, I don't know, man. That felt like different for Embiid. That felt like something that we hadn't seen before. That felt something that he clearly knew was on the line. And I think the the jersey on the opponent mattered. But that was, I don't know, man. Like, I just found myself being like, man, did this actually, like, shift the way people think about him?
Well, it could. I mean, you think about it going into these playoffs. I mean, he'd barely been on the court the past two seasons. But it just underscores this idea that this shows why you're so cautious with injuries. Like, this is all the evidence that some teams are going to need to be overly cautious with their stars, because it don't matter. Play 32 games or whatever he played in the regular season. So long as you're healthy for the playoffs, like, it ultimately, it doesn't matter, right? Like, in a hypothetical world where Jason Tatum had been ready to come back for the playoffs, wouldn't have mattered if he had played a single minute of the regular season. They had enough pieces to get them there. And that's the problem. It's too easy to get there in the NBA. It's too easy to still make the playoffs because you do have a third of the league that's actively trying to stink. If you're a reasonably good team, have a reasonably talented roster, you can withstand the absence of one of your stars because these 10 other teams are actively trying to be bad, playing rookies, playing guys on 10-day contracts, playing their two-way players in March and April. And so even if your star player is not available, you're still making the playoffs. So, like, why push it? Why have that guy out on the court if it doesn't ultimately matter? And so it's almost like you can almost say it's a foregone conclusion at what, mid-January? I mean, if you had asked the books to handicap in mid-January who the 20 teams would be that would either be in the play-in or the playoffs, right? Like, they probably would have gotten it pretty close. And that's where the problem comes in, because it's like, all right, you don't actively even have to try to make the playoffs so long as 75% of your rotation is available for 75% of the games. And so, but I mean, to your point, like, sure, like, is the Joel Embiid narrative being rewritten in front of us? I still feel like it's going to take another series victory. I don't feel like we rewrite narratives on a national level based off of a first round playoff series win. You know, maybe locally, like, maybe the tenor changes a little bit, but like, if they go out there and lose this series in five games, like, nobody's going to remember the miraculous Joel Embiid comeback in the first round.
Yeah. I think that's also the other issue with the NBA is the NBA discourse discussion swings so massively. Like, you know, and honestly, I do wonder this. I'm not even trying to localize this with the Grizzlies, but doesn't it feel like we blow teams up in the NBA a little too soon?
Yeah, I don't agree in the case of the Grizzlies necessarily.
Like, I think the Grizzlies made the right call. Like, in the end, their hand was forced because Ja wants an extension, and there's no reason I'd give him an extension.
Well, okay, I mean, I think the case in point is, like, obviously the Mavericks with, I mean, they were coming off of an NBA Finals appearance.
Yeah, let's set them aside, because I think you can make the argument that's, like, the textbook example of how to get fired.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And, like, I think that's, like, a special set of circumstances. You had new owner that was not really in the basketball business, and you had an internal power play with Nico Harrison, and he wins, but, like, I don't know how repeatable that's going to be.
Yeah.
But, like, let's use the Denver, for example, the Denver of it all. Like, should you really, like, totally redo it?
Well, I mean, Nikola Jokic is still on that team.
Right, but, like, now you're in the spot where, okay, what do you do if you're Denver and Jokic doesn't sign the super-duper whatever max he can sign that's basically, like, crippling? And then you run into this other issue where it's like, okay, if Jokic really is, like, team-first guy, are you in the position now where, like, the ultimate team-first guy should never sign the super-duper ultra-megatron max?
Because all, like, you do is handicap your ability to play with other good players.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a problem. Like, you almost want your...
Yeah.
Like, there's another reason to hold your guy out and keep him from playing 65 games, right? the fewer of these awards up for, then
listen, there's definitely some storytelling with Brunson, because by not signing like the contract that could have paid him the most, it A, opened him up to re-sign sooner with another big deal and getting into a different pool. But it's also like, hey man, what if that got him one extra player? Like that gave them the cap flexibility. It's like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
at the same time, you're talking over the course of a contract. I mean, millions upon millions of dollars that you're leaving on the table if you choose to go that route. So, like, well, I'm not going to blame anybody.
Oh, no. It's one of those ones where it's like, well, whose perspective am I? Because, like, if you're the player or the player's agent, why would you do that?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it's easy for us to say, oh, yeah, man, just don't take the Supermax. Okay. Yeah, because we look at it and we're like, all right, he's already made, let's say, $250 million over the course of his career. What's the difference between a $240 million contract and a $320 million contract? A lot. $80 million.
No,
that's a lot of money.
I always love when we act like these massive numbers are rounding errors. Like,
because we can't compute them.
We act like it is the exact same thing as us going, like, when you're at the credit card thing, it's like, would you like to round up for St. Jude? Like, yeah, you can keep the change. Or like when you're at Sonic and it's like, what tip do you want to give? You're like, yeah, you can keep the change. Like, we're acting like it's the same thing. And it's like, no, it's $80 million.
I'm actually really glad that Sonic has gone to that keep the change thing. Cause in high school, I'd pay for my happy hour limeade with cash, and then I'd, you know, have 50 cents for the car hop.
Whatever you had in your cup holder, like that. Oh yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that's for you. Yeah,
I actively avoid trying to have change now though, and like I don't carry cash. The only reason I carry cash is because the game up at the local course,
run into like the, did your wife take out $20 from your wallet because she knew she was gonna have a place that was gonna have to like valet her car and you didn't realize it, and then like. You play with old guys and they don't have Venmo and you're like, this isn't my fault.
I know. I literally resorted to paying people with chicken sandwiches at some points here.
I don't have that kind of bribery ability. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll continue the NBA conversation next with CJ Hurd. Stick around, you're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. CJ Hurd is a Grind City Media personality. You can see him every weekday on the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurd. He's on the Everything app at ConRadicalness. All right, CJ, so Cobb and I were discussing this, and I wanted to know what your thoughts are. Is there an appropriate way to spend, like, this week preparing for a draft lottery? Like, do we need to do all the tankathons we can? Do we need to save up tankathon leagues? Like, how do we actually prepare for this week ahead?
Oh, that's a great question. First off, shout out Lil' Convey, yo. Y'all long live Lil' Convey, yo.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah, what up, Cobb, man? I'm good. I think that you definitely want to get right with the universe.
Right.
So you want to be on your best behavior. You want to, you know, do whatever you can to get some goodwill from the powers that be. So you need to help a bunch of old ladies cross the street. You need to do all your chores, eat all your vegetables. Get some good energy, some good mojo flowing. So that when time comes for those ping pong balls, you're right with the universe and the universe isn't out trying to punish you.
No, I think you're right. We almost have to like treat the week like we're on probation, whether it be like academic probation where like you got to show up to every class, you're doing the homework, you're doing the assignments, or if like, you know, you've got some community service, like you're just not leaving anything up to chance. Like you have to just be on your best behavior basically for this whole week.
Absolutely. Do a couple of nice things at work. Yep. Maybe bring donuts to the office a couple of days, not just one day, a couple of days, right? What you want to have happen is you want to go into the lottery and you have a surplus of good deeds that the universe needs to start paying you back for. So whatever you can do to get the good deeds done, to engender some goodwill with the basketball universe is what you need to be doing to make sure that you get the best chances of getting the one of the top three picks, or hell, even the number one overall pick.
So, CJ, in your ideal Grizzlies draft scenario, what's that big board like? Let's say they stay at six, right? Let's say the ping pong balls don't go either direction. Unlikely, but the Grizzlies are there with the sixth pick. Are you, I'm assuming, team lead guard, but even within that, there's so many different directions that the Grizzlies could go depending on your flavor amongst those guards who are going to be there in that, let's say, 4 to 10 range. Who is the CJ Hurt flavor, and who would you be most excited by in that range?
In that what range? Six to.
So he's saying if they let's say they wind up at six, which, as Kyle points out, probably not the most likely. It's in fact one of the least likely spots. But let's just say that it's one of the years where it goes chalk and they stay at six.
I mean, I don't think. As long as you get somebody with a top eight, now, even for me, like a top nine pick, if you, depending on who you take at that nine spot, I think that you're going to come away pretty good. I would feel good about it. I think that if you're looking at it and you say, okay, around six, could I end up with Flemings? Could I end up with Acuff? Could I end up with Filan? Could I end up with Brown Jr.? You're going to end up with one of those types of dudes being there for you at six if a guard is where you decide to try and go. And, hey, could I end up with Wagler out of Illinois? And all of those dudes had incredible seasons and had multiple moments this season where it was, oh, okay, I can see how this person has a face of a program right now could quickly become the face of a franchise the next basketball playing season. For me, I'd get excited about any of those dudes, honestly, truthfully. I watched all of them play a whole bunch in college. They all are really good basketball players, and they're all very different. So it is, once you grab one of those, then I feel like I can get a better grasp on what you'll be trying to do and acquire in free agency this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's... I was also thinking about this, Cobb. What would y'all do if they got to four? And let's say the what has been chalk all along remains. So let's say DeBanza or Peterson go one, either or, they go one or two. So DeBanza and Peterson are off. And let's say nobody gets cute and they go Cam Boozer at three. What would you do at four, CJ?
Caleb Wilson, easy. I'm not even hesitating on that one. One of the more offensively skilled players in the draft this season. I think he's got good size. You got a front court now. If it plays out like that, you'd have a front court with somebody like a big bruising type of big and Zach Edey to go along with somebody on the offensive side of things who can go out there and just create a shot for himself and go get a bucket in Caleb Wilson. And Caleb Wilson is a pretty good rebounder, dynamic rebounder as well. I don't think you need to do a whole lot of thinking. If it plays out like that and you get four, just go get Caleb Wilson.
Cobb, what would you do?
So I would be tempted to take my swing with
one
either
of the
Darius Acuff or Keaton Wagler. Because for this reason, I still feel like there could be that quality four man available for you at 16. If Yaxel were to slip, or if Hines Steinbach is there at 16. But I get CJ's perspective, because history tends to reveal that you're better off going best available as opposed to like franchise need. And I think that's true across sports. So, like, I get it. The consensus is that Caleb Wilson is the fourth best prospect in this draft. So, like, I wouldn't be disappointed, but man, the temptation would be there, because you know, like, the hype and the buzz on draft night, if you come away with one of those guards, is going to be higher than, frankly, I think it would be if you came away with Caleb Wilson. Just because, like, guards sell tickets, guards sell jerseys, guards help you sell the future. And to me, more than anything right now, like, that's what the Grizzlies need to try and do, is sell their fans on the future of the franchise.
Well, I think you can sell the fans on the future of a franchise by being good and drafting players that make you good. And but if you're telling me the option is Caleb Wilson or one of those really dynamic guards, I think Caleb Wilson gives you a better chance of being good. Now, no matter who you take, you're going to need a couple more pieces. It's not like you're a draft away or a free agency offseason away. But, like, you can go Caleb Wilson and then turn around and get creative at 16, maybe package 16, and fall a bit further back in the draft and get another asset to go along with that pick. And you can end up with somebody like a Christian Anderson, the point guard out of Texas Tech, who is so good running the pick and roll, very good setting teammates up, very good running an offense. And, again, one of the most dynamic pick and roll players I've seen from the guard spot in college. And so there's this draft is really, really deep. It's really, really good, not just at the top, but in the later first round as well. So there's a bunch of different ways you can go with 16, depending on what you do with your first pick. I wouldn't be I wouldn't sell the guards from, you know, after that top four or five, that top echelon guard. I wouldn't be selling those dudes short.
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about, and I don't know, maybe because I know you watch every game, is there a theme that is emerging? Because I, you know, like whenever we watch a playoff round, it's like, well, this is the year of, you know, lead guards or 3-point shooting or whatnot. And it's like, it feels as if right now, the general takeaway that everybody has is you've got to be able to defend, to which I think that's probably always been true. But maybe what it is now is like, you can't have necessarily a defensive weak link on the floor. Are you seeing that play out?
I think it's, we talked about it some on Jessica's show. She brought it up. The top 11 3-point attempt teams in the NBA this season, I think maybe only one of those is left.
Still standing.
I think we're beginning to see, maybe, I hope so. But I think we're beginning to see this notion of, hey, just come down, chuck up a bunch of threes, and then even if you miss all of them, three is more than two, and you'll be rewarded for taking all those threes. I think we're beginning to see a change in that. So instead of being a team that is hell-bent come hella high water on hoisting threes, I think we'll be seeing teams built with the expectation now and the intentionality of, hey, if we're not making threes, let's go ahead and get downhill and start trying to make plays in the paint. I think we're beginning to see that shift from more perimeter dominant to now more interior focus. We'll see, though. It still has to play out.
Yeah, thank goodness. It was borderline nauseating to see this NBA just devolving into a glorified 3-point contest. And I think that's part of what has made this first round of the playoffs so compelling. I mean, you have all but one series going at least five games. You have multiple series going either six or seven games. So there does seem to be like a return of the competitive balance. But at the end of the day, CJ, and I'd be curious to know your take on this. It does feel like it's almost a foregone conclusion that this is Oklahoma City's to lose. And if I'm wrong on that, or maybe if I'm right, like, who do you see being the team left in these NBA playoffs that could realistically mount a charge or mount a challenge, you know, to the Thunder, kind of in the way Indiana did last year, where maybe going into the playoffs, you didn't even look at Indiana as a team that could push Oklahoma City, but then they did. Like, who's left on the board here that could really push OKC, assuming they do get to the finals?
I think the Spurs, assuming they get to the finals before they even get
there. Well, I mean, look, it could be before them, too. It could be before them, too. I'm just trying to envision a scenario where Oklahoma City gets pushed to the limit. Like, where we see that team, we see SGA and Chet, like, with some sweat, you know, in a game six or a game seven. It could be, I mean, the Spurs, I would assume, you know, could check that box, but again, it's like, are they seasoned enough to do it?
Yeah. Well, listen, that's the great question. I think most people would say that the Thunder, this is the Thunder's to lose, to go to your original part of the question, but we don't know how they go about winning it. You know, like, it's all right, last year was set up the same way. It's the Thunder's to lose, but we didn't foresee the game seven with the Nuggets, right? And we also didn't foresee the game seven with the Pacers, and it being one of those things where, hey, you know what? If Halliburton doesn't go down and pop his Achilles, who knows what the outcome could have been. We got a good idea of who's the special teams left in this playoffs. How it plays out, though, we don't know quite yet, and that's what makes it fun sitting down and watching. So the Spurs, I think, can absolutely push the Thunder. I'm being honest, I think the Knicks can as well. The Pistons are interesting, and I know they just got done with a seven-game series against the Orlando Magic team, who fired their coach immediately following the loss. But I think that Pistons team has something from a physicality standpoint that's just going to make it hard to beat them in a seven-game series. I think that Cade Cunningham is a unique talent, being that he is a bigger point guard, somebody with the ball in his hands. He's a good decision maker. And we saw the last three games of the season, last three games of the series against the Magic, when he cut down on his turnovers, that Pistons offense was different. And it was special. I think from games like two through five, maybe one through three, I can't remember. It was a three-game stretch there where he had about 24, 25 turnovers in three games. And, yo, you're not going to beat a good team when your best player, the dude with the ball in his hands majority of the time, is turning the ball over on average eight times, nine times a game. Once he started taking care of the basketball, that offense really got the humming, and the Pistons were able to come back from 3-1. So give Tobias Harris, give Jalen Duren, give the rest of those dudes, Duncan Robinson, et cetera, a ton of credit for making that comeback. And I think that they could also push the Thunder. And listen, I'm not going to bet out any team. I know this dude is old as hell, and I know he don't like staying in the hotels around here, but I'm not going to discount any team with LeBron James. I've seen him do it too many times. I've seen him do it as old LeBron when he got that 7-seed Lakers all the way to a Western Conference Finals. I've seen him do it as young LeBron when he just single-handedly put the Cavs on his back and took down one of the better teams in that era, the Detroit Pistons, in a seven-game series, right, to surprise everybody and get to an NBA Finals. They ended up getting swept by the Spurs, but it was still impressive they even got them there. So any team with LeBron James, I'm given a chance to go out there and do something special. But outside of them, like, that's it for me.
Well, I was kind of thinking about this. Did Cat have the best first round? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know, like, we talk about Cade. We talk about, you know, the impact that Wimby and his concussion had, but then when he came back, but it's like, if I'm trying to think of the teams that can push the push the Thunder, like, I think you got to have a difference-making big. And I really felt like Towns was pretty damn good, but it, like, I don't know. Does that mean he's going to be good against the Sixers? I don't know, but it's like, if he does keep playing at that level, it's like, this is a special, special talent. So I don't know. I guess maybe I've been so wrong on the Knicks for so many times. Like, I'm trying to flip my brain and go, well, how could they actually do this?
No, yeah, I absolutely think that the Knicks could push the Thunder in a seven game series, and I would be willing to bet that they're the favorite to come out of the East now. With how they dismantled Atlanta once they figured some things out and the struggles of the Pistons, I think that Karl Anthony Towns presents a different sort of a matchup nightmare for Chet Holmgren and for Hartenstein. But I think that you might be able to throw somebody like Jalen Williams on him and say, hey, just get into him, get under him. Nobody had more offensive fouls called against them this season than Karl Anthony Towns. If I remember correctly, I think he was at 65 and Jaylen Brown was somewhere around 40 or so. And so Karl Anthony Towns has an ability sometimes to get out of control and to pick up silly fouls, the silliest of silly silly fouls. The same thing that frustrates people about Jaren also frustrates them about Karl Anthony Towns, in that, yo, we see how dynamic you are as an offensive player. But man, just the silly fouls that you get sometimes takes you out of the game. The defense hasn't stopped you. You've stopped yourself. And so if Karl Anthony Towns can avoid that, manage to avoid foul trouble, absolutely. That's a Knicks team that, if matched up with the Thunder, could give the Thunder some problems. That would be really, really fun to see, because the Knicks got dudes, plural, they can throw at SGA. And dudes who are really good defensive players, really high IQ Ubers when you think about Hart, and you think about Anunoby, and they can, and Mikal Bridges, right? And you can see how defensively they can rotate length and quickness and size and all of them being pesky on SGA, and maybe that would be enough to slow him down, which would then in turn slow the Thunder down. But I need to see the Knicks not mess one off. I need to see them not just give a series away before I'm all the way in on what New York might be capable of in a NBA Finals.
CJ, you're great to join us. We appreciate it, my man.
Appreciate you.
That is CJ Hurt of Grind City Media. Want to remind you that if you've been thinking about selling your home and you want to maybe do it the easy way by taking a instant cash offer and selling your home as is without any hassles, before you do that, call my buddy over at Keller Williams Realty, Josh Hysaw, because he's going to give you the same guaranteed instant cash offer, but it'll be at full market price. You can get the same convenience as the other offers, but you'll walk away with more money in your pocket. He can even give you a little bit of extra time to find a new place if you need it. You won't be rushed. You'll have up to 4 months to hand over the keys. Josh also offers flexible fees, no upfront costs, and he'll let you out of your contract anytime, risk-free. So if you're thinking about selling your home and you want to do so the quick and easy way, do so by calling my buddy Josh Hysaw of Keller Williams Realty at 901-461-8147, or you can visit his website, joshhasthebuyers.com. You can also check out the over 350 five-star Google reviews by Googling Hysaw, H-I-S-A-W. You can also sell your home in the traditional way if you'd rather go that route as well. His marketing approach brings in all of the buyers, and you can sell your home quickly and for a very, very good price above market value. So, again, if you're thinking about selling your home quick and easy, call my buddy Josh Hysaw, 901-461-8147. Let's get into the list. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.